He wanted to know, was the shooter an employee of Walmart? And we were able to confirm that.
Another mass shooting in America. It's Wednesday, November 23rd, and this is Here and Now Anytime from NPR and WBUR Boston. I'm Chris Bentley. Just 3 days after a mass shooting in Colorado that's now being prosecuted as a hate crime, police in Virginia say a Walmart employee in the town of Chesapeake killed at least 6 people at the store Tuesday night. One of the shooter's coworkers said she had just clocked in when her boss started shooting. Here's Brianna Tyler speaking to Good Morning America.
And basically, as soon as my team leaves, said, all right, guys, you know, we have a light night tonight. I looked up and my manager just opened the door and he just opened fire. He wasn't aiming at anybody specifically. He just opened fire. He looked directly at me, but luckily he missed my head by like an inch or two.
We've got more on that story and all the news at hereandnow.org. You can also keep up with the latest throughout the holiday week by listening to your local NPR member station and visiting npr.org. Today in the podcast, we're also tracking Thanksgiving travel as millions of Americans head out to visit friends and family. Flight data suggests it's the busiest Thanksgiving travel season since before the pandemic. And reporter Seth Kaplan is watching to see how the airlines hold up. He spoke to Robin Young.
And, you know, we know summer air travel was chaotic. There were flight delays, cancellations, lost luggage. Your family lost luggage, right? For weeks?
We sure did.
Okay.
It turned up in the middle of the night on our terrace. Yeah.
Okay.
Coming back from Europe.
You got it back, but are things any better?
They are. And I can tell you that statistically and also, once again, anecdotally, because I was on an airplane last night and the airports were busy, but everything went more or less fine. I can tell you it took a little while to get our bag back at the other end, a symptom of staffing levels at airlines. I've had that a few times recently. You check a bag, you know, usually it's kind of on the belt by the time you get there. Mm-hmm. Not last night, but everything was rather smooth.
Well, what about the work schedules of travelers? You know, many people working from home. Is that having an impact on the way people are traveling?
Well, it has during the pandemic. People had different flexibility from what they used to have, right? Schools in a lot of places, even before the pandemic, started closing all this week. So it sort of spread it out. You talked about that Sunday being the busiest. It used to be Wednesday. Today would have been extraordinarily busy. Still a very busy day, but it's the peaks and valleys aren't quite as high and low as they used to be.
Okay. And just any tips you have for us as somebody who travels all the time, just a couple things as you think of them, what we should keep in mind.
Well, I mean, I mentioned the bag. Hey, if you can avoid checking a bag, you always have some additional flexibility. If something goes wrong with your flight, you need to quickly run across the concourse to the other flight. A lot of times the first thing a gate agent will ask you is, did you check a bag? Because if they have to reroute a bag, you know, it takes more time. Also, just be creative in terms of helping the airline help you, right? If you have an alternative airport in mind, if they're trying to get you on the next flight to wherever you were going and there's somewhere else you don't mind going, tell them that.
Well, we want to add, remember not to pack the cat, because apparently someone did. I mean, there was a bag that went through the screening. It was being checked, and the TSA officer noticed the outline of a cat inside this bag. And the owner of the bag, who they found, said, oh, my gosh, it must be my roommate's cat who wandered into the bag. And anyone who has a cat knows they will get in your luggage. They will do other things to your luggage if they don't like you going away. And the TSA, what do you think the TSA tweeted? Maybe you know this. About what they did.
Yeah, all kinds of puns, and I can't even get them out of my mouth.
They let the cat out of the bag.
Exactly. Yeah, and they did. And I'll tell you, you know, our cat, Oscar in particular, we have two, we've made that joke that he will find his way into our luggage eventually and go with us because he doesn't want us leaving. Well, apparently
if by some strange reason someone thought they were going to sneak an animal on board, don't, right? Because there's special places where animals are put in that luggage hold that would not be good for an animal. Listen, Seth, we have to note, this is your last time with us, but it's a good reason. You've got a great new job at CBS Philadelphia and KDKA Pittsburgh. You're going to be doing some news?
Yeah, covering Harrisburg. It's the living where I've lived for the past couple of years, but now for those CBS-owned stations in Philadelphia and Pittsburgh. And the pleasure has been all mine and the honor, Robin.
Just an extraordinarily
professional and kind bunch. Thank you so much.
Well, it's been ours. We wish you all the best. Thank you so much, Seth Kaplan. One last time, Here Now's transportation analyst.
Happy Thanksgiving.
You too.
Farewell, Seth, and safe travels. Coming up next, Here and Now resident chef Kathy Gunst stops in for her annual Day Before Thanksgiving visit to give Robin and Deepa Fernandez some advice and ideas for appetizers and light first courses to fill out your Thanksgiving menu. Stick around.
Robin, this is my first Thanksgiving at Here and Now. Mm-hmm. Our next guest is an annual tradition. Every year we deliver her on a platter. Here and Now resident chef Kathy Gunst. She comes on with advice for recipes for turkey sides, her family's traditional cranberry sauce. We'll have all the links at hereandnow.org. And Deepa, I still go back over them every year.
But the tradition continues. Kathy is here with us now. And Kathy, after all these years, you've come up with a topic that you haven't covered before on our show.
It's a miracle. As every food writer knows, it's very hard to come up with something new at Thanksgiving. But I started to think about how hungry you get while you're waiting for the turkey to roast and the potatoes to mash and the pies to bake. So I thought, what if I came up with some really light but really satisfying and delicious sort of appetite-enhancing first courses or nibbles. So the idea is that we're going to keep it light.
Yes. And I'm thinking of my sister 1 year made a squash soup and she took the squash out of the little gourds and then put the soup back in the gourds. It was the most extraordinary thing, but it almost killed her. So you've got a roasted mushroom soup, which we can do today, and it's easy.
So easy. This will not disturb anybody, and it will not take up precious oven space. You today, or before the turkey goes in, you roast mushrooms, shiitakes, whatever your favorite type of mushroom is, with onions and scallions and fresh ginger. Mm. And while those are roasting, you heat up vegetable stock with more fresh ginger. You throw all those roasted vegetables in, simmer it for 15 minutes, whirl it up, whirl, whirl, it's done. No dairy. This is unusual for me, a vegan, dairy-free, very, very delicious soup. And I suggest serving it in a shot glass or a little teacup so you don't drink too much of it. This is really just supposed to whet your appetite for the feast to come.
Great idea.
Just a little taste ahead of time. So you also have a recipe, Kathy, for a smoked salmon and caper spread, which is just a few ingredients and a few food processor.
Exactly. 6 ingredients, food processor or blender, smoked salmon, capers, lemon, chives, cream cheese, whirl, 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 finito, done. Serve it with some fresh vegetables. It also is delicious the day after on bagels or toast. Again, a small bite, full of flavor, but it's not going to fill you up and make you think, I can't eat all that food I just cooked.
These are great. And we'll have them all at hereandnow.org. And again, these are great. I have to say, Kathy, on the next one, we discussed whether or not an intervention was required here. I mean, you know, the whole pumpkin thing, like everything pumpkin deviled eggs.
Okay, stick with me here because I'm going to come clean. I don't love pumpkin. I don't love pumpkin spice. It's not my thing. But I was thinking about deviled eggs, and I thought, well, what does that have to do with Thanksgiving? It is many people's tradition. So I tried it, mashing the yolk with a little bit of pumpkin puree, again, a little lemon juice to brighten it up, a little bit of mayonnaise, and I put it into the egg white, little smoky paprika on top, and then a tiny sliver of scallion green at the top of the egg to mimic the pumpkin. And I gotta say, I was wowed.
Okay.
You know, I'm with you, Kathy. That sounds delicious to me. I think each to their own preference, but that's sounding good to me. And you know what I'm loving too, Kathy, is I'm in the kitchen with you right now, and the whirling you're talking about makes me feel like we need some good music on. We should be whirling while we're doing this, and you're going to suggest some cocktails or maybe mocktails while we twirl ourselves and the food processor?
So you don't get exhausted from all the whirling. This drink works really well as a mocktail with no alcohol, or you can, you know, booze it up. The first step is really fun. You take red and or green grapes, put them in your freezer for 30 minutes. While that's happening, you mix up apple cider and ginger beer, with some ice cubes. Mm-hmm. You take the grapes out of the freezer and you roll them in sugar. And that is your garnish. It's this beautiful red or green, sweet, frozen. It kind of keeps the drink cool, but it's also really pretty. And then you put a very thin slice of apple on the side with a dash of ground cinnamon. It's almost a drink as an to honor an apple pie. And then because I'm a professional, I tried it with bourbon. And then I tried it with dark rum.
Even better.
And it works any which way.
Okay, and you're not
it's
saying
an apple pie in a glass.
Yes. And you're not saying if we're not professional, we should not try this at home. You are saying we should. And I
That's up to you, Robin.
Right. You had me at roll grapes and sugar. I might just do that. Kathy Gunst, here and now resident chef. And again, all of her recipes and links to past segments, everything you need to know about the turkey, it's fabulous. We'll have it at hereandnow.org. Kathy, happiest of Thanksgivings.
Thank you. Have a wonderful holiday, everybody.
After the break, pianist Eddie Palmieri reflects on a lifetime at the vanguard of jazz, salsa, and so much more.
He's one of the most renowned Latin jazz band leaders of the last century. 10-time Grammy Award-winning Eddie Palmieri is a composer, a pianist, and a jazz master who's performed all around the world. He was looking forward to performing two sold-out shows this Thanksgiving week at the famed Blue Note in New York City. Unfortunately, Palmieri suffered an unexpected health issue. He's at home healing. Instead, his band is playing each night this week in tribute to the great Eddie Palmieri. Last month, Palmieri was delivering his signature style on stage at Yoshi's in Oakland, California.
The living legend himself, Mr. Eddie Palmieri.
I recently had the opportunity to talk with him about his life, his music, his sense of mission, and the joys of being a student well into your 80s. We are so delighted to have Eddie Palmieri joining us now. It's such a thrill to be able to talk to you. You know, I have been a fan of yours for years, and I've just felt so lucky to be able to see you at Yoshi's when you performed in Oakland recently.
We left that best Bernie, my dear.
You did such a great show, and you know, you really bring it. And so you have been playing for more than 7 decades. How does it feel when you're on the stage?
Oh, it's to get on the stage, I'm always nervous. And
you're
and
nervous? Down, Eddie Palmieri is nervous?
Always, always, always. And once I sit down on the piano and I hit the first note, then it's all over.
I could tell from the minute you hit the note, I mean, you had a great band out there with you. What drives you? You're about to turn 86.
That's what they say. But there was a trumpet player called Chocolate Amintero that he died at 92. He was the greatest Cuban folkloric trumpet player. And he taught me that after 50, you got to count by one again. So I'm going to be 36.
I love it. So you know what I want to know, Eddie? I want to go back to the start. You grew up in the Bronx.
I was born in Harlem, Spanish Harlem. My mother arrived in 1925 on a cargo ship from Puerto Rico.
Right, and they...
And then my father arrived the next year in another cargo ship. And then I went back on a cargo ship when I was 12 years old.
So you grew up in the Bronx in the 40s and 50s with your family from Puerto Rico. You worked as a soda jerk at your parents' luncheonette, where you loaded the jukebox with mambo songs.
I named it El Mambo.
You named it El Mambo, okay.
I was already playing timbales with my uncle Chino Isto Alma Tropical. That's Chino and his tropical heart. But my mother didn't like that. I already had started playing piano. By 89, I was studying with an Afro-American teacher called Miss Margaret Barnes. She used to have her studio on the 7th floor of Carnegie Hall, and she was my brother's teacher. And my brother started professionally at 14 years old.
And let me just say that your brother, of course, is the great Charlie Palmieri.
Oh, yeah. I always say he was the pianist. I'm the piano player. He was the best brother you could have ever had. And then as I got older, he was the one that recommended me to all the different orchestras.
So he opened a lot of doors for you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, one of the major places where you really got your start and made your name was at the Palladium nightclub. And right. That was a place that was really, you know, you came at a point where music was really merging and transforming because of who was in and around New York City then, African Americans, Cubans, Puerto Ricans, and all their music coming together.
The Palladium ballroom was packed. They were all great dancers in the orchestras that didn't excite the dancer. They never brought him back. For 10 years, the Machito, Tito Puente, and Tito Rodriguez were the orchestra. I walked into the Palladium in 1963, and I stood to 1966, and I closed it when it closed in 1966.
So there was de facto segregation in who could play in Manhattan, and you had to get police clearance to be able to enter and play in a club?
Oh, yeah, it was a racist situation, of course. There was a cabaret law that was imposed. There was too many blacks and Latinos playing in Manhattan. So you had to go to the police department and give them your fingerprints. There was the highest degree of racism that was happening.
So you're then part of this Afro-Caribbean, which becomes Latin jazz. How did you come to this?
Well, first of all, my love for the music that came out of Africa, okay? My brother and I inherited that. My grandmother that I told you I met in Puerto Rico, she was black. I know my rhythmical patterns like my brother, because we got it from Africa. And I joined the orchestra of Vicentico when I was 19 years of age. And there's where I learned all the Cuban orchestras through a gentleman called Manny Oquendo, percussionist. He bought me 25 78s, and I studied those records till now.
You know, I want to talk about one of your greatest hits, Azúcar Para Ti, and the Library of Congress added it to its national recording registry of greatest songs in history. Let's take a listen. I have to say, this is one of my favorite songs, Eddie. And the song broke barriers in part because it was recorded much longer than the standard 2.5-minute single at the time. And after that, so many other musicians were able to do that. And I'm wondering if this is how you earned your nickname, The Disruptor.
Well, what happened was when I record Azúcar, you couldn't record more than 2 minutes and 45 seconds to put 12 compositions on an LP. And my solo alone was 2 minutes and 45 seconds.
Wow.
The record hit 9 minutes and 30 seconds, and it landed in the Library of Congress, which was a tremendous honor, and it's there forever. And I'm completely proud of that composition.
You know, Eddie, I lived in Harlem for many years. I lived close to Harlem River Drive, and I love Harlem River Drive, your band, that is. What I loved about that was the way you weaved a political undercurrent into your fusion of funk and soul and Latin jazz.
That's right. Very well done, too.
From 125th Street to a bridge called G-Dub, several shades of living, from diamonds to mud.
Why was that important to you to do that?
Oh, because the tensions in the streets were so high. We had the Black Panthers, you had the Young Lords, and we were looking for a villain. And that villain is named Poverty. And poverty is the real problem that we have around the world. And Harlem River Drive was wrapped around that story.
Many people might not associate Latin jazz with some of the political struggles that you were involved in at the time of the civil rights right. movement, the time of the Young Lords.
One of the writers, Calvin Clash, a dear friend of mine, he died in Sing Sing.
Is that why you performed at Sing Sing Prison? Because you did a live recording at the prison.
Let me introduce my man and yours, Mr. Swing, Eddie Palmieri, and Pala Ocha Tambo.
His name was Calvin Snooky Clash. I went to visit him, and they had moved him to another prison, but it was too late, so I recorded anyway without him being there. He's the one that wrote Broken Home, Seeds of Life, Harlem River Drive, The Theme. The other composition, which talks about, you all know the story how it all began. It took 5 days and then came man. All the land was free and so were we. No slavery to lead to poverty, idle hands.
You all know the story how it all began. It took 5 days and then came man. All the land was free and so were we. No slavery to lead to poverty.
Was it important to you to bring the politics into your music? Where did it come from?
That comes from me. If there's something wrong and you believe that it's wrong and you have the opportunity to make a statement, then I did. I did also the one, Libertad Lógica, that's when I recorded Justice.
Is that why in your concert at Yoshi's, you know, not long ago here in Oakland, you actually talked about that. You played Libertad and you talked about the Young Lords and what they were fighting for in New York City.
Of course, of course.
Is that related to today?
Of course, because it's still here. When I'm talking about it, this isn't what was happening then. It's here and it's getting worse every day.
And Eddie, what role does music play then in these kinds of times?
Oh, music is medicinal. I mean, music is medicinal. When I perform, at that moment, you're not thinking about whether you're going to be able to pay the rent or pay for your medicine. I just make it that I'm aware of the condition that exists so that when you're listening to my music, you know what's going on. Like the tension and resistance that develops when we're playing, that comes from the rhythm section. And that rhythm section will bring you to the highest degree of a musical climax. And that must be in every composition. So that's why I always say when I have interviews, I don't guess I'm going to excite you with my music. I know it.
Yeah, I can tell. You know, you mentioned Tito Puente. You've also played with Dizzy Gillespie, Herbie Hancock, Machito. These are really amazing artists. Tell me about, you know, what that was like. Do you have a favorite?
Oh, well, it starts, has to start with Art Tatum. And then McCoy Tyner was who changed my whole life towards listening to jazz because I always stood just in Afro-Caribbean music. And he became my mentor. And he also gave me an award, the National Endowment of the Arts, a jazz master. Mm. It was McCoy Tyner who gave me my award, you know.
Yes, Eddie, you were honored in 2013 with the NEA Jazz Masters Award, and you did a solo piano performance for the ceremony. To turn 86, and I wonder, you know, how you feel about performing. Will you continue to perform?
Oh, I if I don't perform, I wilt away. What's keeping me alive is my music. I've got to get on that piano. At one time, we used to do 20 concerts in Europe in 30 days in 11 countries. I certainly cannot do that anymore. But I love what I do, and the urge to perform is constantly there, more and more and more, and that makes me a very happy camper.
What do you want your legacy to be, Eddie Palmieri?
Oh, that's simple. Here lies Eddie Palmieri, a great musical student. That's what I need, a great musical student, because that leads to preparation. And preparation then leads to quality in your presentations of your recordings, which are, to me, they're all treasures. And it's very rewarding.
You've had an incredible life, Eddie. Thank you so much for sharing it with us.
I've been very fortunate, and I'm very blessed.
This podcast comes from the team behind Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston. We've got new episodes in your podcast feed all week through the holiday, as always. And as you're gathering with friends and loved ones, sharing side dishes and passing plates, why not spread the word, too, about this podcast? If you like what you've been hearing, say thanks with a rating on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. We are grateful for you, our audience, every day. Thanks. Aline Sear, Emiko Tamagawa, and Shirley Jihad. Todd Munt and Peter O'Dowd edited the show. Technical direction today from Caleb Green and Mike Moschetto. Mike wrote the theme music along with me and Max Liebman. Our digital producer today is Grace Griffin. The executive producer of Here and Now is Carleen Watson. Thanks for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.